Welcome to the Halloween edition of Digital Outbox. And it's a spooky hello from Ian. Joining me today is Henry. Hi, Henry.
Oh, hello. That was very spooky, Ian.
I thought it was spooky. I was going to do an accent, but as we discussed earlier, the Jamaican Welsh one doesn't go down well.
It would go down very well, but whether we should inflict that on the listeners, I don't know.
No. And I'm waiting, I can't wait for Shaquille's accent. Joining us also is Shaq. Hello.
Hello.
Oh, I'm trembling.
That's all I've got.
So how are you both on this fine Saturday afternoon?
Wonderful.
You? Brilliant.
I'm okay.
We seem to be missing somebody.
Oh, young Chris. I was going to say small Chris, but I'm not going to pick on his height anymore. So I'll say young. He is a pup. So he can't join us this weekend, unfortunately.
Shame.
And he seemed quite gutted about it as well.
What are we going to do for all the Windows fanboyism?
Well, to be honest, it just means we can pick on it. I mean, we can actually just come out and say it's a pile of crap.
Without hurting his feelings.
I don't really care about his feelings, let's be honest.
I think we've established that long ago.
you certainly established that last week, Ian, definitely.
Nothing to do with it. In fact, I'll just thank everybody that wrote in and said that they found that quite a funny episode. I'm not quite sure if it's they enjoyed a billion or they enjoyed it because it was funny, but there you go. Will we crack on?
Let's crack on.
Yeah.
So the first thing this week is it's not just Halloween today, but we're celebrating a birthday. Do you guys know what birthday it is this week?
Is it yours?
A birthday?
It's not mine.
It's not mine.
It's not mine.
Well, if it was yours, you'd be 40, wouldn't you? And speaking of 40, the internet has turned 40.
Seamless link, Ian. Seamless link.
Honestly, it's just so much effort went into that. So, I couldn't quite believe internet was 40 years old.
Older than me?
Older than you. And it's just slightly older than Shaquille as well.
Yep, it is. I don't know, for some reason I think internet sort of started around the maybe 90s, early 90s, so it's kind of bizarre.
I think for us it did when we first started going to uni.
Yeah.
When I first used it, I'm sure it was about 93. Because I can remember getting downloading games like Doom and maps for Doom, and I remember Cindy Crawford pictures as well for some reason.
Well, I still seem to recall buying my 56k modem sort of in the mid-90s.
I can still remember the noise they made as well.
Yeah, and if it's 40 years old, then what was it before the... I suppose you had a 14K modem as well at one point.
Yeah, I think what it is that it first started off, it was from ARPANET. So there's a really good article on The Guardian, which we'll put in the show notes, that takes you through the whole kind of history and why it is 40-year-old.
Interesting.
It does seem absolutely incredible that it's been 40 years. And you know, I can't imagine living without it. Actually, I was away last weekend and there wasn't any internet, and I must admit, I did almost have like kind of the shakes. It was that bad. Not having the internet was a disaster. So it's very much ingrained in our lives these days. Well, certainly mine.
Well, if you remember a few weeks ago that I was talking about it as a service and I put it above water. So I'd maybe take water first, but it is quite important. So just looking at this article, 1969 was ARPANET, the first network. The Pentagon's Advanced Research Projects Agency had an idea for a computer network. ARPANET was to run on the new packet switching technology. And that was the first use of Tinternet on the 29th of October.
Mm-hmm.
And then it seemed to just be amongst scientists, really. You know, the first email was 1971. It first started going global, 73. And then so on.
I wonder if those scientists first used it for porn as well.
Was that your first use?
Yep. Claudia Schiffer put pictures downloading them.
Anyway.
Oh dear. Dear, dear.
I need to stop there because we'll get banned one day. So happy birthday, internet. Where would we be without you today? In fact, people out there wouldn't be able to hear us prattling on about tech.
No.
That might have been a good thing.
But what would Tam do then if he weren't here?
Well, he certainly wouldn't be the Apple fanboy he is now. No. So, speaking of tech, Android 2 and the Motorola Droid. Shaquille, a big week for that.
A big week indeed. Let me start off, first of all, with the Google Maps navigation.
Oh, yes.
A few days ago, Google released a video for the Google Maps navigation app. And initially, it'll be coming on Android 2 equipped mobile phones. And there's quite a nice video on YouTube that you can watch, which goes through all the different features of this app. And it's presented by the most boring-looking, geekiest guy I've ever seen, who I think constantly gets reminded to smile, because it's just like watching Gordon Brown do a speech. He just randomly just smiles.
To be honest, I was going to get him on the podcast, because I thought he was quite good. He's better than us.
Well, maybe, yes. There could be much truth in that.
So, I mean, the app itself looks actually quite nice, very well designed, and it's going to be free. And they say that hopefully they'll be releasing it on the iPhone as well in the near future. It's got all the usual navigation apps features that you can expect. But additionally, they've got voice search using Google Voice, which looks really good in the demo that they showed. And what it does is it can use Google Maps, you know, the actual images that you get, and overlays your route on top of that. So what you see, you know, like in the real world, it's a good reflection on screen as well. So you don't tendencies to get lost less.
Yeah, I think that was one of the biggest things I looked at. I've seen people at work and I've used it myself. Let's see if I've got to go somewhere I don't know.
Sometimes it's hard to get your bearings.
You can't visualise it,
yeah.
But if you pull up, you know, if it's in one of the places, it's Street View. Mm. You can pull up Street View and you think, okay, I know that's there. I know that's corner. And there's a church there that I can recognise. Yeah. And it really helps when you get to your destination.
Yeah, it's amazing, Street View.
Yeah.
The interesting, you know, other thing was that when you arrive at your destination, and like you say, if it's somewhere you've never been before, it's very easy to see exactly where you are, instead of like getting out of your car and then wandering around for a few minutes just to, you know, find your location.
Mm.
So that was, you know, overall that looked very promising and free as well. So it makes you think, you know, about all these other devices and applications that are out there. You know,
yeah, and I think that was the biggest thing for me. When I think they used the front end, it looks like they'd done a few things that were pretty unique. Mm. You know, just because of things like satellite and street view, but having free, you know, I don't know if you saw the share price of Garmin and TomTom just
plummet.
Yeah, 15-20% in a couple of hours.
Yeah. I mean, it made me think about, like, you know, TomTom's hardware they brought out for the iPhone. And then you've got the app as well. And you just think, you know, if they were aware of this application coming out, would they have maybe released it at a lower price? Because £100 just for the hardware, and then you have to pay about £60 for the app. It's a lot of money. And you think, why not just get this one instead when it comes out?
Well, I think one of the things is, though, that what you've got with TomTom and Garmin is you've got the stuff, the maps and everything, local to the device. And what I've noticed with the Google stuff is that if you're using it for sat-nav, it does take a while to download stuff as you're going along. And it's not quite as slick and as seamless as it is with the professional proper things. And Street View, you've got all those pictures, which is absolutely fantastic, but surely it must take ages for it to surely it's a bit clunky.
That was my only worry, was the fact that, and it was Chris had pointed out in the show notes before he couldn't make it this weekend, just about the, you know, what if you've no signal? And I know when I've been going, you know, when I've been trailing up further north on one of my mad hill walking expeditions, there's a lot of time you don't get any signal.
Yeah.
You know, you maybe get an actual GPS signal, but you're not getting any 3G or Edge or anything like that to download a map.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to sort of determine, you know, how many people would use this, and based on these facts, you know, about the possible loss of connection.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, it is free. So would some people maybe accept that? That's a free app and they don't pay?
I mean, I didn't think there would be any reviews of this until, you know, well into next month.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks like there's been a few Droid review units out this week, and Gizmodo had a review.
Yeah.
And their headline was, specifically around Google Navigator, their headline was, it's good for free, but far from perfect.
Yeah. I mean, instead of like reading out the review, we'll add a link to the show notes, but if I can maybe read the sort of conclusion at the bottom, this
yeah, that'd be good.
Good points and bad points. The good points they say is it's got amazing voice recognition engine. Whether that works for British accents, hard to tell at the moment. And it's got live traffic and alternate route planner. And that's something that caught my eye because I've got TomTom, which I bought years ago, and the maps are a little bit out of date. And they want me to pay something like £45 to update the maps.
Yeah, which is nasty.
Whereas with this one, the maps are always up to date. So the other good features of this are the text-to-speech, and they say it's got good routing and fast rerouting, or as they will call it, routing and fast rerouting. And some of the negatives they said is the text search features are overlapping and confusing. They say the interface overall needs better flow, which I could kind of understand on a mobile device. Maybe it's not as easy to use as they made it out in the video. There's no points of interest category browsing or go home feature. And there's no multi-stop trip planner either. So, I mean, it's expected, isn't it? It's got its pros and it's got its cons as well.
Yeah.
And maybe that's also why it's free, though, because you couldn't really expect people to pay for it if it's not really the finished
output. But also with some of the features missing, like the go-to-home sounds like they could easily solve in a software update.
Yeah.
You know, and some of the UI, you know, things probably are a 0.1 release or a next version release can sort that. I think it's the fact they've come out and said, we've got this, it's now free, and I think you're only going to see it improve over time. I mean, the first TomTom that came out all those years ago, did it have all these features?
No,
it was rubbish.
You know, so it's I don't know, I think it's a real game changer. The thing that surprised me was I actually thought they would keep this solely for Android.
Yeah.
And they've come out in the press and said they're working with Apple and bringing it to the iPhone. And I think it's all going to be tied up with the old Apple versus Google, Google Voice, all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it'll be interesting because Apple previously have always said when Google was wanting to bring out Google Latitude, they said, no, we don't want it as an app because it'll confuse people that use our Maps application, which is so lame.
Just so poor.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting because I think this is something that people really want. But will Apple really seem to court like TomTom and some of the other, you know, GPS or sat-nav makers, you know, in their previous release? So it's whether they're quite content just to not have it. I don't know.
So, I mean, leading on from there, because this has come out, Google also released a video for Android 2, which is, again, available on YouTube. And when I first saw this, actually, for the first time since the iPhone has come out, it's got me excited about like a different device. Because when Android 1 was released, it didn't really excite me that much. I thought it looked kind of messy and not user-friendly.
But the front end to me reminded me of Linux. You know, like a lot, well, just a lot of potential, but fairly unpolished.
Yeah, that's what it is, basically. It's kind of unpolished.
Yeah.
Whereas this one looks a lot more polished than Android 1 was. And it's quite a few nice features that I liked about it. There was one where, like, you can click on a contact and then you get, like, a little strip pop-up. So there's different ways of communicating with that contact, which I thought was quite good because it's quite easy to then either give them a call, send them an email, or start a chat with them.
Well, I think what's interesting about that also is the Palm tried to do it with a kind of unified contacts.
Yeah, they did.
I think they've also got a unified kind of messaging. And the bit that frustrates me and on the iPhone is I've got messages in one place. I've got a Twitter app to go and get tweets. I've got Facebook to go and get Facebook. And even with my email, I've got all these different inboxes. I don't have one unified inbox. It would be great if I could say against a contact, here's their Twitter name, here's their Facebook name, and just give me all the messages for that one person so I can almost see a whole conversation flow. I think it's a far better way of doing it.
Well, it makes more logical sense, doesn't it? That you deal with people, not with apps.
Yep, and it means I'm not then worried about the service I'm using. So whether it's for speed, that I wanted to text Shaquille, That's the easy way to get in touch. If I was wanting to do a kind of message to our podcast list and I did it on Twitter, at least I could then all see it in order as I've contacted you over the last 10 days, say.
Yep.
I guess then that leads on to the Motorola Android. Sorry, not Android, Motorola Droid. Which we sort of briefly mentioned last week because they released like a little preview video of it.
Mm.
And this week, another video was released and some of the websites have had review models in as well.
Yeah, so in Gadget, I've got the review up already.
Oh, right, okay.
So,
I mean, the release for that is the 6th of November in America for $199. That's after a $100 rebate.
I don't know why they do all these rebates over there. Why can't they just release that? It's the same with Palm. They did this, it was $299, but then you've got this crappy little cut out of token. Just sell it for what you sell it.
I don't know
if Americans seem to really go for that, though, this whole rebate thing for everything.
Crazy Yanks.
Didn't they used to do this sort of stuff here as well? If I remember back, I've gone back a few years.
What, with Green Shield stamps?
No, sorry.
You're going way back.
No, with rebates, I meant. Because I remember buying a Sony Ericsson and I got like £100 sort of rebate, or cash back, as they call it.
I remember there were some things like that, but it doesn't. I mean, this seems to be a whole, like, you know, I've seen it either you buy it and then you've got your little token, you send it away and they'll send you the money back, or. You see, I remember my mate up in Aberdeen Lewis brought me back some, and it was some computer type magazines he brought back, and they all had these mail-in rebate type things.
Mm.
You know, buy from us and use this, bring along this voucher. Just crap.
Okay.
Anyway.
So this Motorola Droid, it's got 3.7-inch screen, 480 by 854 resolution.
I think that's the biggest thing for me. That screen looks amazing.
Yeah.
Does look good.
Just having the higher, and I guess it's only slightly bigger, but it's having the pixel density. I just think it's lovely. I just think it must be great. And we'll play back a video on it. It looks superb.
It's got a removable 16 gig SD memory card, and also got a removable battery as well, which some people seem to put a lot of importance on. And for me, most of all important, it's a 5-megapixel camera.
Yeah.
And it's also
there's also a flash along that as well.
Oh, okay, cool. And it's got
Does it take good pictures though? That's the thing.
Well, on Engadget,
5 megapixel, 3 megapixels. Who cares? Take good pictures.
The Engadget reviewed a couple of shots, and then there was one of the guys on MacBreak. He had a couple of shots as well, and it was one without flash, one with. It looked pretty good. You know, and I know that the megapixel thing's always been a bit of a con sometimes, but.
Yeah,
it looks to take decent, and the flash made a big difference.
Good.
I think that's what makes a good picture, isn't it? If you've got enough light, and if you don't,
flash. savior of the universe. Oh dear, I keep forgetting I'm being recorded.
I just like the way I can lull you into a false sense of security.
So, other than that, it's got a physical keyboard, as most Android phones have. Am I wrong in thinking, has it got like a fingerprint thingy as well?
It's got a little D-pad thing.
Oh, is that what it is?
It looks like a fingerprint scanner from an HP laptop. But no, it seems like it's a little D-pad.
So, I mean, as I say, we will put the links to the reviews in the show notes, but I think the overall impression was it's good. It's better than previous Motorola phones, certainly, and previous Android phones. But it's not quite there.
That seems to be what the reviews are saying, that the Android 2 really has caught up, but it's still not, it's maybe just not as slick as using the iPhone. Okay. But certainly the App Store on Android, or the whatever it's equivalent, right? They're talking about there was something like 10,000 apps now, and it's really starting to take off.
For me, I mean, I think it's I don't know, sometimes I think it's quite a nice looking phone itself, but then other times I just think it's a bit too.
No, I like the look of it. I actually don't like the keyboard. And the only reason I'm saying that is I've used a couple of Blackberries now, and the keys are too small. And I know I've got fat fingers, but that keyboard looked horrid.
Keyboards are really difficult to do, though, with these things.
I worried about the iPhone keyboard before I got it, but you just need to trust it will fix your errors, apart from far and far or whatever. Is that the one that always gets wrong?
Yeah, you put in four and it puts
four
in
four.
Four
and fur. Four and fur. Jeez.
Shit.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know how it, it just, oh, every time.
So some of the quick observations of the phone from the reviews on Engadget, they say this big screen is a killer. It's very bright, very crisp, and they say there's like tons of rooms for your icons and widgets. It's a lot faster as well, or noticeably faster, when you move from app to app. Although they did say that some of the scrolling looked a bit laggy. Android 2 itself, they reckon, is definitely more cleaned up. But at the same time, it still has that same sort of Android feel to it. And the browser seems improved as well. Pages load up in a fully sort of zoomed out mode, and load times are quicker as well. Scrolling's faster.
Yeah, I saw a video comparison, and it was the same. I think it was loading in Gadget site on right. the 3GS and the Droid, and the 3GS was still quicker. Mm. Way.
It did look a lot quicker, though.
Oh, it's just quicker than the other Android phones.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And I think, like what you said with the keyboard, they do mention that as well, saying it gets them getting used to. And it's got the same sort of hand position issue as they had before in the G1.
Mm.
But overall, they say it's usable. And Facebook is integrated in accounts.
Right, okay.
I find that a bit, not surprising, maybe a bit more annoying that so many companies are putting so much focus on the Facebook now that you've got to have Facebook integration. Cause,
well, I think, but I mean, if you look at their user base is massive.
Yeah.
And people are using it for their email, for their instant yeah. messaging. Actually, you know, they're not using email so much anymore. They're just using Facebook.
Yeah. So Facebook's becoming their little hub for keeping in touch.
Yeah, I mean, and personally, I don't know if I like that. Because, I mean, I use Facebook a lot, but...
I'm not a big Facebook user at all. You know, it's like I'd rather... I don't put my photos up on Facebook. I'd rather put them in Flickr. You know, and it's just, there's just other choices that I prefer.
You do still stalk people on Facebook, though, don't you?
You keep saying this, that I stalk people. I don't understand.
Calm down, to you. It's just a joke.
Yeah. I actually, just talking about Facebook, I thought you'd be talking about eHarmony.
Anyway, so that's all the... that's all the Android... coverage this week.
So, moving on to Twitter lists. And yes, Henry, that's the third show today so far.
So.
Twitter list has been talked about for a while. And it's a way of taking people that you follow and sorting them into lists. And it's been rolled out really slowly. So, I think the beta started about 3 weeks ago and a few people got it. And especially, I guess, the bloggers and the real techie guys out there got it, and they started really raving about it, saying it's going to replace Follow Friday and it's going to make a big difference. Certainly the two accounts I've got it this week, and I think everybody's now got it.
Yeah.
And I think this is going to be massive. I really like the way you can now sort people into groups or into lists, but you can also follow other people's lists.
It's a bit like Spotify collaboration list, isn't it? You can then share out your list with people.
I just think it's going to be a really nice way of actually just discovering new content, discovering new people worthwhile following.
Definitely.
The thing I really didn't like about this, though, was that it was generally public. And that was kind of the thing that made it different to a column in TweetDeck. I mean, I like TweetDeck, and I just use a column, which is effectively a list. You just put people into different lists or different search terms or whatever, and you get a different column in TweetDeck. And this seems to be a pretty similar thing, except that everybody can see your list.
Well, it's pretty similar, but the one thing that struck me was straight away everybody now has to go to twitter.com to use it, because none of the clients are supporting it, and they're only just starting to roll out, and they're saying they're wanting people to use it, they're wanting developers to pick it up. So TweetDeck and a couple other big ones are already saying that they've got it in beta, or they're going to support it as soon as possible, because there's another website I think I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, Brizzly. And Brizzly had this concept of creating groups, and that's just gone. You know, it's Twitter's doing it, and it's doing it better. You know, so straight away for another startup like Brizly. And the Brizly actual front end's nicer because it auto loads in images, so you're seeing them in within the kind of the timeline view, so you don't have to click and view them. But apart from that, it's not doing much more for me. So yeah, I just thought this was a really big change, and I think something that's really going to grow over time. And if you want a really good list of people to follow, then twitter.com/digitaloutbox/podcasters, and you can follow us all from there.
Very good. You just had to get in there, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, if you can't promote yourself, what can you promote?
Well, exactly. Very good. Yeah. Which brings us very nicely on to, actually it doesn't at all, but I'll say it doesn't, but back on. I'll say it does.
It's just a nice catchphrase.
It's just a nice catchphrase, isn't it? It brings us nicely on. Yeah. Yeah. To the UK government has confirmed this week that they're going to implement that whole three strikes and then you're disconnected, that plan for file sharers, which was, you know, they said that they weren't going to do that in the Digital Britain report. The government have had a look at that and said, oh, actually, no, we don't think that's right. We think we should disconnect people. And it's got a lot of course, the ISPs up in arms about it. Because they're supposed to pay for half of this plan of monitoring everybody, and the rights owners are supposed to pay for the other half. But the ISPs have now got together and they're just saying, look, we're going to have to challenge this legally because it's wrong in principle and it's not going to work in practice. And I just have to say that every time the government come out with trying to say something on this, Peter Mandelson, he just seems more and more clueless whenever he opens his mouth. I mean, he really hasn't a clue about it at all.
But the thing that annoyed me was it was about maybe 3 months ago, and it was a 16 or 18 year old intern for one of the, I think it was Price Waterhouse. I think he'd done this kind of paper on how the youth of today uses the internet and how they see the media. And it gets circled around, and some people were kind of surprised, but they were quoting the evidence from that paper. You know, so it was like, most teenagers, talking to his friends, 19 people says they'd never buy a bit of music. So that becomes a bit of Mandelson statistics to trot out.
It's really disgraceful. I mean, he's just in the pocket of the big four music companies, particularly when there are these legal download services available now that kind of, to me it just seems that the rights owners, if they really wanted to, they should really sort something out rather than trying to pretend that A, they're even going to be able to find these people, because, you know, everybody that is into file sharing now is already moved off having their IP address easily recognised. They're already having it all encrypted and everything. So
exactly.
We've lost Shaq.
Yes.
We're talking about disconnecting people.
he's offline.
I reckon what's happened is he's been disconnected.
Yeah, there you go.
He didn't even get his three strikes.
Hello?
Was that your first strike?
Is that
your third disconnected?
I think you're disconnected for file sharing. That's terrible.
I think it's Mandelson. Mandelson heard us slagging them off and just thought, we'll take you out.
Was it just me who got kicked out then?
Oh, yeah.
I was sitting there thinking, have they gone quiet?
That's your first strike.
That's echelon for you, you know. They monitor all these communications and then, it's the government. Conspiracy theories.
Getting back on to the story, it's going to be heard in late November in Parliament. It's a bill from 2011. A couple of things I really don't like. The cost of monitoring this is massive. They're
huge.
Talking about millions and millions to not only to do the monitoring, but also the actual processing of the actual information they're going to gather, the sending out of letters. And seemingly also there's an appeals process. So even once you get your third strike, before it can be enacted, you can actually appeal and go to some sort of appeal round it all. The other article I read said it wasn't just going to be if you download a torrent. It's going to be a torrent that has been planted by music industry. So basically it's almost like marking some dirty money. They're going to mark a torrent. And if you're caught downloading that one, that is the one you're going to get the letter for.
I don't know if you guys watch on Channel 4 News when they were talking about this the other day, and they had Radiohead guitarist on as well.
Oh, yeah, here we go.
No, he was basically saying, you know, this will just drive people underground. Mm. And he said it's not going to stop anybody from illegally downloading, because he was saying something about he knows people that actually use this account that's in, like, Sweden or Switzerland or somewhere like that, outside UK, and they can get internet connection that way, and they remain totally sort of, like, off the radar.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, there are means out there to, you know, get around anything that the government can want to do about it.
And also didn't point out that for the music industry and for the film industry, this has been one of their biggest years on record financially.
Yeah.
They obviously want more, you know, it's like greedy.
Yeah, bastards. Well, if you provide an easy way of doing it and it's good value for money, people will go to it.
Yeah.
People will buy it. People don't want to be... you know, they don't want to do stuff that's illegal, really. They just, you know, if you give them an easy enough way that's reasonably priced, people will do the right thing.
Yeah. So I was spoken about Spotify before, and they yet again are trying to work out a good model, aren't they, Henry?
Yeah.
They are, that's right. You know, this is the point in the show where we have yet another Spotify story. I mean, we seem to have a Spotify story every week. You know, you'd think we had shares in them or something, because we seem to talk about them all the time. But you know, they do seem to be in the news every week. But they've seem to have responded to some of the other offerings that we've been talking about in the last few weeks. And for the first 6 months, you can now get Spotify Premium for £6.99.
Which is not too shabby.
Not too shabby, but the offer is ending soon. The other news with Spotify, of course, this week was that they lost their CTO. And the way things are going these days, he announced that he was leaving on Twitter because he said he'd got a better offer.
Where else? Where else? So that, I mean, Twitter we talked to him when you were talking about everybody's on Facebook, but Twitter seems to be where all the tech crowd is. You know, it seems where all the news breaks.
And there's surprisingly a lot of UK people on Twitter as well, actually.
Yeah.
When you see what's trending, I find it quite interesting that the stuff that's trending is often quite UK-centric.
Like X Factor. Oh. It does my head in. But if you remember the cringeworthy Kirsty Work interview that she did with the Twitter CEO, and I can't remember his name, but I think London was the second city in the world for actual Twitter users and the amount of tweets. So Britain has seemed to have adopted it far quicker than America did.
Yep.
So yes, good old Spotify. I'm still premium member, still find it quite useful. But like certainly less so. So I think I'm going into my third month, and this might be my last.
Your last month, ooh.
I'm paying £10, I just don't think I'm getting value out of it.
Mm. See, that's what, well, not for Spotify, but with like iTunes or any other download music service. The fact that they don't have the overheads now of burning CDs, packaging, shipping them all out, it's all done digitally. Shouldn't they be charging a lot less for music than they are at the moment? And surely that will then tempt more people to actually buy legal music.
I think so. I mean, if you look at some of the prices of Amazon MP3s, and if you can go and buy an album for, you know, £3, £4, to me that seems good value for money.
Exactly, yeah.
For other people, and I can only quote me as one of the guys at work, even when Radiohead did their free album and he had to pay 49 pence for a credit card transaction, I'll just go and get a torrent because I'm not giving them 49p.
That's just shocking.
But, you know, that's... As I said before, people now see it as free because they can get it for free.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they also don't see the quality as an issue. You know, so that to me, a good quality MP3 is required, not a 128K, no. A couple of little blips and bits of static in the middle.
Yeah, anybody who says you can't tell the difference between 128K and, you know, 256 or 320, then they're deaf.
Well, they're really lucky, aren't they? Because they don't have to pay for the higher quality things.
So tempted to do what was that? Just to get you to repeat it. But anyway, the Google Power Meter. Now, I was quite envious of this when Google announced it for America. So Power Meter is basically a service on the web that allows you to track your power usage. So you can see how much power you're using. They announced it in America, and this week they've announced they've teamed up with First Utility, which is a small UK energy supplier. Now, the nice thing about First Utility is they're actually putting smart monitors. So if you become a First Utility customer, they'll install one of these smart monitors, and they've now teamed up with Google so that you can see that information via power meter. So anywhere you go, I guess, over your phone or sitting at work, you can see what your house is churning away.
Nice.
There's also a second service provider they've teamed up with called AlertMe. I wasn't quite convinced about this one. It's £69 for the device, but you're actually committed to a £3 monthly subscription to get the information through
the
Google Power Meter.
That's disgraceful.
And I'm guessing they're looking at it that you're going to save money.
Yeah, you're not going to save £3 a month on your mobile, on your electricity bill.
No, it was, I don't know. I look at that model and think nobody's going to use it.
No.
It's like spending more than 50 quid in Monopoly for your get-out-of-jail-free card.
The king of analogy strikes again. Our final news story. And really, to be honest, we need the little one here to do this.
The little one.
But he's not around.
He's up. He's upstairs.
He's up. He's trapped. I did get a text off him saying, can't make it out, I'm into my fifth day. So
we can see his wee legs dangling from upstairs.
His wee legs. See, when you talk about his wee legs, you need to mention they're quite chubby as well. Anyway, we talked about Microsoft going for Family Guy tie-ins, but it turns out that they've actually watched the show now, and they've realised that the content doesn't fit in with the Microsoft brand.
Which we were all thinking at the time when we discussed this before.
So I wish I could say it as Chris would say it, but apparently jokes about deaf people, the Holocaust and incest, normally Family Guy content, doesn't appeal to Microsoft. And he's rounded off his comments with the word chickens. Bless. I think there's a bit of bitterness there because I think secretly he wanted to download it and constantly watch it and think, yay. My operating system's now on.
Well, I think he wanted it for any time you played a Get a Mac ad, he could then play that instead.
Instead, all I can think of is Steve Ballmer going, developers, 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 developers. Anyway, we'll keep that for some Christmas show one day. Now into Apple, and quite possibly the shortest ever Apple section known to man.
Very disappointing.
We have scraped the barrel.
We really have.
To get three stories together. But the first one up is really good. VMware Fusion, which I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, Shaki was now been playing with all week. yesterday.
You liar.
So,
well,
are you impressed?
I think I can shed a bit of light on it. Yeah, I am actually impressed. I can't remember. I think I might have mentioned it several podcasts ago, but I was kind of struggling with the Fusion 2. I just found, well, I felt that it was just really sluggish. And not only was Windows XP or Vista, I think it was I was using at the time, was sluggish, it also affected OS X as well. So it was getting to that point where I was just thinking, you know, I'm just going to stop using it altogether. But Fusion 3 is now out, and I've been using it for about a day. And instantly I have noticed a huge improvement in speed. The virtual machine, when you start it up or shut it down, it's so much quicker. It's unbelievable. Other than that, the actual speed of the virtual machine, in this case Windows 7, it's I think it's really fast. You know, I'm sure it's probably fast on a native machine, but as a virtual machine it's really, really fast, and it hasn't affected my use of OS X at the same time either.
And it's you've got it using Windows 7, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it supports all the Aero features in Aero 7, in Windows 7, sorry?
I believe so, but I've not enabled most of these features.
Right.
Some of the things I think they've done with this is they've improved it for Snow Leopard, especially. Right. And it's now supports native 64-bit compatibility and 64-bit kernel as well, which explains the improved speed. And it also has support for OpenGL 2.1, DirectX 9, Shader Model 3. So I think that will all obviously support this Aero in Windows.
Excellent.
So
very good.
Yeah, no, it looks really good. And one thing to keep your eye on is Parallels. I've got a beta out of Parallels 5. And I was looking through some VMware comments on the forums the other day, mm-hmm. and it was saying that VMware Fusion's performance compared to it was poor.
Oh, right.
Wow.
So it'll be interesting to see, because if you're seeing a big difference between 2 and 3, and certainly the reviews I've seen Definitely. Have really been recommending it from a performance point of view.
Yeah.
Then it'll be interesting to see if Parallels is a step up again.
Yeah, I mean, as an example, if I had, like, yesterday night, I had Windows 7 running, and I didn't want to shut it down, so I just thought I'd do suspend mode, which I used to do with 2 as well. And on 2, it used to take, I can't even imagine, maybe 2-3 minutes for it to fully suspend itself. This one, it takes, like, literally seconds. You've got, like, a little bar at the bottom and just whips along, and then within, like, 10 seconds, it's gone. And then when you start to back up, again, it's extremely fast. So, I mean, I've been impressed so far, but it'd be nice to see Parallels as well.
No, that's excellent. Another update this week was iTunes 9.0.2.
Yeah.
Mostly for, it looks like, Apple TV 3 support. Now, none of us have got Apple TV, so that was a story this week that they've got a new front end on it, which seems to have got mixed reviews. Some people saying, yeah, it looks a lot nicer, and other people saying, no, it sucks when viewed at on big screens, it looks quite grubby. So yeah, and it was interesting because it's Apple TV 3 support, and it's to support the new iTunes albums and that the playback of that content.
Yeah, LP.
But that content doesn't work. You've actually got to re-download your LPs in a couple of weeks' time once they get that sorted. So it looks like they've maybe had to change the LP formats slightly.
I would say that's Apple. Cool.
Yeah. And I guess the kind of, just for comedy, the other thing it did was it killed the Palm Precinct. So any comment on that, Shaquille?
Get out.
Palm actually looks to be taking quite a kicking.
Palm are like, they're like a beggar that just keeps coming back for more. It's like
ridiculous. It really is a nonsense. They just need to write their own sync software.
Exactly.
It's a piece of cake. It's not a difficult thing for them to do, and they have to do all this nonsense with
the thing is, you look at Android have just said, well, we'll sync up with Amazon and we'll get support for Amazon Store and all that good stuff. And I just think I think Palm are in shaky pegs. You know, their share price is really dropping. Even in, I think it was either Thursday or Friday, it was down 13%. I think it's on the back of, you know, Apple doing well, but also Android coming out and looking really strong. And I think the Palm sales just aren't good enough.
Well, the Palm market share has been dropping phenomenally over the last few years.
Yeah.
All that the Palm Pre has done and the new thing that the Palm Pixie that's coming out the next wee while has done is just stopped the rot, really. But they're still way down at about 6% of smartphone sales.
Yeah. I actually think the Pre's a good device, but it's just not enough.
Is the Pixie designed for people like Chris?
Oh, I'm saying nothing.
That was a bit below the belt, I shouldn't have said.
It was.
Harsh.
Our final Apple, I'll just say bless. Our final Apple story, and this is a real scraping the barrel.
It really is scraping the barrel, isn't it?
There's some patents that have been granted this week for Apple, Henry.
Yeah, and the US Patent Office is notoriously slow at getting around to approving these things. So when Apple actually submitted these, I don't know. And really, to be perfectly frank, they really shouldn't have bothered. But the first was a head-mounted MP3 player. I mean, Apple are supposed to be the king of cool, you know. How cool could you look with an MP3 player strapped to your forehead? It's just not going to work, is it?
I'm now just thinking of, and it's one of Shaquille's mates, I don't know if I should go here. Somebody was selling, I can't remember his, I think I do remember his name. He was selling on eBay a cap with a radio button. You know who I'm talking about.
Wayne Humphreys.
There you go.
Well, we better be careful because, you know, because Apple have the patent now on that sort of thing. They could go after him.
It was a fisherman's cap with a radio bullet.
Oh, class. So what other patents have they?
Well, the other
patents or patents?
It depends whether you're this side of the pond or the other one, doesn't it?
But anybody with common sense, I think, would be saying patents.
Patent. It's patently obvious that's how we should be saying it. Yeah. Anyway, it's been dubbed the eye shoe. And basically...
Is that for chasing people away?
No, it's not. No, what it does is there's a sensor in the bottom of the shoe which tells how much is left on the sole, so that when it wears down, it can send a signal to your phone or to your iPod, your MP3 player, whatever, and tell you that you need to buy some new shoes because, well, you know, it's important for the state of your feet. You know, if they all get rubbed away, then you can, you know, that's really bad for your feet.
Seriously,
do I sound convinced? Well, that's what it is anyway, and they've got a patent for it. It could be the next big thing.
I'm not. I mean, I tend to just look at the sole and think, yeah, I need to get a new pair of shoes.
Do you think this is like another one of these? Could it be another one of these stories that Chris could have picked up? Like, you know, these Portal T-shirts sort of stuff. Do you think it's all made up?
Well, no, the patents don't usually. I mean, most companies do kind of like scatter in thousands of patents. I remember BT tried to say they had a patent for the Tinternet. Which was laughable. Actually, when I saw the ice shoe, I just thought of James Bond and was it from Russia with Love and the little dagger coming out of the shoe. I thought, is this some sort of device for Glaswegians? You know, they can actually get an Apple branded dagger in their shoe.
Well, that would have worked. That would have been useful. But this just seems completely. This seems like it's for people that never take their shoes off. They don't actually see the soles of their shoe.
And they only have one pair of shoes they wear all the time.
Maybe it's hold on. As Americans, they are quite rotund. Maybe it's for the kind of fat guys that can't see their feet. They're getting somebody to put their shoes on. They just turn up at a store and say, new pair of shoes, please. Anyway, we've managed to drag out that Apple section.
We certainly did.
Sorry, listeners. Gadgets and games. Orange. It's now been confirmed. It's November the 10th.
Woohoo!
He's been to too many Apple conferences.
I've been to too many openings of Apple stores.
In fact, me and Henry were at the Apple opening, weren't we?
Oh,
we were.
God. I was further up in the queue, spotted him in the queue.
Was he the one with the Apple logo shaved in his head?
No,
it wasn't me. That wasn't
me. Thankfully not. That was terrible.
I did give it big cheers when the guy came out with his 20 yeah when the guy came out with his 20 inch iMac that he just bought that day. It was like,
oh,
woo-hoo!
Was that Roy?
It was Roy.
Roy bought his iMac that day, and he was met with cheers.
Yeah. Well, it was a cheer. It was me.
The thing is, if Chris was here right now, he'd be, oh, for Pete's sake, he was such a misery. Anyway,
bless.
So it's out November 10th. Surprisingly, still no news on pricing.
What do you think that is?
I don't think it's going to be any different to O2. Yes. I think it's just going to be the exact same price. Moving on to something that's actual proper news and maybe slightly interesting is the Sky Player has finally hit the 360. It was launched on October 27th, which was Tuesday this week. By the time I got home from work, it had been removed. Due to unforeseen technical issues. And what it turned out was that there was unprecedented levels of simultaneous demand, which makes me think they just didn't understand how many people would actually want to use it, and it fell on its arse. That's it, basically.
That's the technical term.
Well, yeah, when a server goes down at work, that's what I usually say. It's fell on its arse, give it a minute. It came back up the next day. For me, worked as they described it. I actually was pretty quick in getting the streaming up and running. You know, you picked a channel, and within maybe 2-3 seconds, the streaming would start, and the quality was good. It was in SD, and the TV guide's there, and there's also some on-demand content, quite a bit, actually. So it's and there's a whole lot of crazy pricing, which I just don't think they've done a very good job in explaining to people how much this thing costs and how or who can actually use it. And I did have a summary. Here it's here. If you have Sky installed, have multi-room or Sky Max broadband and an Xbox Gold account, you get all this for free. So it's like having an extra Sky device for nothing that you can view content on. You have Sky but no multi-room. nor Sky Max Broadband, but you have Xbox Gold, you get On Demand for free. You have Sky, and you pay $9.99 a month for multi-room PC and have a Gold account. You get everything On Demand and live. You're a Virgin TV customer with a Gold account. You get the On Demand stuff. Just sign up for a Sky account online. You have Freeview or Freesat and no Gold account, you get nothing.
So what sort of stuff do you get on the On Demand?
It's just different content from Sky One and a few other channels.
Oh, right.
If you've got a second, you know, if you've already got a Skybox and you're paying for the full whack, it's a great way of getting content elsewhere for free. And that's about it. The actual menu system works really well. It's the same kind of dashboard as you've got on the rest of the 360. And it was actually surprisingly quick. So not a bad job.
Not bad at all.
Retro Sega console Zippo lighters.
Well, I'm sorry. I saw these and I thought I just have to put these in. These are just they're ordinary lighters, really, but they're shaped like retro Sega consoles. So you get one that's a Mega Drive and one that's something else, which you can't quite remember.
Master System.
Something like that. But they're
it's good to know that the research is like really, really well done on this show.
I'm afraid so. But I thought they looked really cool, and then I found out that they're actually £70 plus shipping and taxes. Well, they've got to come from Japan. I mean, obviously, you don't think they make them here, do you? Or you know, they have to make them in Japan, because that's where the only kind of people are that are going to buy these things. Anyway, so they're about £70 plus shipping and taxes. And then I thought, actually, you could buy a proper console on eBay for much less than that. So I don't think I'll be buying one. But I thought it was a nice idea.
And they do actually look very nice, I must admit. But I wouldn't buy one either. Final gadget is the DSi XL, which has come out of nowhere, and it's basically an extra large Nintendo DS.
It's for the old people who can't see very well. The screen's too small and they need something bigger.
Well, it's funny because I was talking to Shaquille through the week and he said he was thinking about buying one. So obviously you're right. It's exactly the same as a DS, same functionality, but the screen's bigger. And it's just bigger as in not more pixels, just bigger size. It's out in November in Japan. And quarter one in Europe and US. And I just thought it was a bizarre time to actually announce something like this before Christmas.
Seems very odd.
but also noticed at the same time that Wii sales have really fell. I think they're 43% down on this time last year.
Mm-hmm.
Which is fairly dramatic. And I just don't think they've had the games. They've just not got the same market as the 360, the PS3.
Hmm. I like to add in a little story in the gadgets and games section.
Secrets.
One thing is, we all like God of War. We loved it on PS2, and we're looking forward to God of War 3. And if you're not already aware, God of War 1 and 2 are to be released on the PS3 as a collector's edition, so it'll be all HD'd up. And the US release date has been announced, which is going to be 17th of November. If you're lucky, UK shouldn't be too far behind. I'm hoping it'll be within a week of the American date, but if not, I think it'll be at least around about Christmas time. So if you're a fan, then look out for that.
Mm. I also noticed that the UK edition's not getting the God of War 3 demo.
No. Oh, there's been a God of War 3 demo thing. You could get it in the game, and then they were also saying if you buy District 9.
Yeah, the Blu-ray edition.
Yeah, you get it on that.
Yeah, but again, I don't know if that's just in the US, which is a bit cack. But I'm looking forward to God of War 1 and 2.
Yeah, and finally, one other game, which at the moment there's no UK release date announced for it, and we don't know if it will be, but as you know, the PS3 is region free, so there's no reason why you can't get the American version. It's a game called Demon's Souls.
Mm.
It's like kind of an RPG slash slash 'em up type game. And it's by a Japanese developer called From Software. And I don't know if you're aware of them, but when the first PlayStation came out, they did some really nice RPG games called Kingsfield, which I still remember playing and I thought was really nice. So it's the same guys, they developed this game, which looks really nice. Apparently it's like ultra hard, but at the same time, it's supposed to be amazingly brilliant as well. Now, it's come out in America about a month ago, I think. In fact, less than a month ago. And it's been published by Atlus. And it's gone down a storm in America. It's, you know, turned out to be a sleeper hit. So, you know, search for it online, check out the reviews, and if you like it, there's no reason why you can't import it from America. And one of the game companies I would recommend is, I think, we'll add a link to the show notes, it's some Canadian company, and when they ship their orders out, they don't charge this, or they mark it down as a gift, so you don't get charged any import duty. So I think you can expect to pay around £42 for it.
Well, cool. That sounds good. And it'd be, can you just add that to the show notes? Because you keep on saying we and you never add it in. I never know what you're talking about.
Shut up.
No.
I'll add it in.
We've got people out there that look at the show notes.
Like who? Henry.
Tom, Henry. Me. Okay. And I want to know what this Canadian company is because I don't know them.
Hang on. Give me a second.
Hang on.
I've got it bookmarked.
Right. While you're looking through your bookmarks, we'll move on to some picks.
It's Video Games Plus.
And the website is?
Videogamesplus.ca.
Ah, .ca. Interesting. Right, we'll move on to some picks. Henry, if you'd like to take us through yours first.
Well, my pick this week is something called mock-ups. If you've ever done any kind of developing or you want to do like kind of web pages and things, you want to show people, often you, or you want just want to even sometimes do some doodling on a piece of paper and you kind of do that kind of thing, you draw things out on a piece of paper and then you kind of work out whether things are going to work or not. Mockups is basically an online version, or you can download some of their products. They've got a free demo version you could do online, and you could do your maybe iPhone apps you want to do, or web pages or programs or anything at all really. And they kind of come out with that kind of look like they've been kind of sketched. Which it actually helps when you're kind of showing them to people that it's, you know, obviously it's not the finished article, it's not exactly how things would look, but they could kind of get the idea of how things might work and you know, what might happen if you press buttons and things. That's my pick. It's called Mockups.
And just on that, I actually think it's lovely.
It works really well.
The last couple of specs I've done at work, I've done a couple of mock-ups, and I did toy with the idea of doing this kind of sketchy look. And I understood the theory behind it. If you do it as a sketchy look, it makes it, you know, people don't expect to get that look and feel. Whereas if you actually draw it out proper, they're then like, oh, I expected my button to be there because it was on that screenshot.
Yeah.
But yeah, this looks, can you work at this? Can you do collaborative?
You can, and you can export in XML, and then somebody else can import in XML. And if actually you've got, if you've bought some of their offline products, then you can use it offline as well.
Very good. This is very nice.
Very good.
Excellent pick. Shaquille.
My pick for this week is an iPhone app, and it's called Red Laser. It's basically a barcode reader. It's £1.19 on the App Store. And it's, surprisingly, it's quite an accurate barcode reader, even on the standard iPhone 3G camera. And what you do is you just scan an item, and it will then search on Amazon and Google for a cheap price for you, which you can then click on the link and then you can order it from there, or you can check out the details in Google before you make a purchase. For me, it's more of a gimmick. You know, it's quite good fun checking out things, see how much they cost. But I suppose if you were out shopping and you saw something that you wanted, maybe a DVD or an electrical item or something like that, you could quickly scan it in and see how much you can get online instead of buying it in the shop.
Yeah, these guys have done a really good job of this barcode reader, because I mean, underlying technology is open source software for just obviously scanning a barcode. Mm-hmm. But they've done some really clever stuff on the in the background to make sure that it actually works, because there's loads of barcode scanning software and apps on the App Store. But they don't really work very well, and this one does. And they'll even license the software if you want to use it in some of your own iPhone apps. So
very nice. I mean, what impressed me was because when I try to scan something in on the screen, at least the picture looks like too blurry for the scanner to pick up, but it still seems to work somehow, which I thought was quite cool.
Yeah, and I actually bought this on Friday morning. So I was sitting at work and I was listening to another podcast who recommended it, and I'd seen it before and I thought, oh, may as well, it's only a quid. And as you say, it works so quickly. Mm. The only thing I'd have liked was, I mean, it's doing Amazon, and I wonder if the links to them present, I'm guessing they'll have some sort of referral code. So if you do buy it through that link, they're getting a bit of kickback.
Yeah.
And it does Google. It would have been nice if it was, you know, it did a lot more stores as well. You know, so if you're looking at electrical, you know, product, or if you're looking at a, I don't know, you know, a book or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it would be nice if it did that plus location to say, in this area, here's what other people are selling this at.
Well that's the great thing though, Ian, isn't it? Write your own iPhone app and go for it.
Yeah. Moving on. my pick this week, and it's tied in with the Twitter list story we had earlier on. So it's a website that's just started up called listorious.com, and it describes itself as a directory of awesome lists on Twitter. The nice thing is it allows you to upload or to link in lists that you've generated, but you can also view lists by type and tag. So if you wanted a whole load of tech lists, then you can go and see those lists. If you want a list of, you know, different sports ones, you can go and see it. And I think they're about the first ones to get their website up and running. I can already see in that being the go-to place. So if you've got Twitter and you've got lists and you're wondering what all the fuss is about, have a look at this website and subscribe to some of these lists, and hopefully some good content will start flowing your way.
So you have to upload your list for it to appear?
Well, you basically log in and say, here's a list I've created. Right. So it's just really just sharing out your list. For me, it's more a discovery. It's more seeing the other lists that are out there, because there's a whole load of, you know, there's a whole load of kind of tech journalists you can follow. There's a whole load of, you know, if you're into the kind of showbiz side, there's a whole load of showbiz people you can follow. It really depends on how you want to use Twitter.
So maybe if I search for like tech news on that Digital Outbox, it'd pop up.
It would have done if I'd added it.
Right. Yeah, I've just done a quick search there for Digital Outbox and it's come up with nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah, we'll see by the time this show's out. It'll be there. Maybe.
That's good. Okay. Well, there's no point making a pick and then not having us listed, isn't it? What's the point of that?
This is the second week in a row that people have criticised my picks.
What happened last week?
Yeah, you know what happened last week. Okay. And that brings us to the end of another exciting edition. Thanks for your feedback for last week's show. We actually got quite a lot on the website, which was much appreciated. Mm-hmm. And actually sparked off some nice healthy debate. It was good to see Tam got his magic mouse and he seemed to really like it.
I have suggested to him to submit a guest review of the magic mouse, but he hasn't responded.
What's quite interesting is that... you can now get in touch with us. So via Skype, if you want to send in a question or a comment or a query or a guest review, Tam, that's a guest review, because I'm sure if you keep saying it, you'll do it, then Skype Digital Outbox. So if you call Digital Outbox and leave a voicemail for us, and we'll either get back or we'll respond on the show next time. So hopefully people will start to use that as a way of getting in touch. You can also visit our website, www.digitaloutbox.com. You can email us, info@digitaloutbox.com. And as we said, we're on Twitter. Digital Outbox is our Twitter name. Henry, where can we find out more about you?
You can get me on Twitter, TalkRubarb, or TalkRubarb.com/WordPress.
Fantastic. For myself, I am my blog's END.net and Twitter is Sweeper. Finally, Shaquille, where can we find out all about you?
My blog is at shaquillenaim.com and my Twitter is ShaqN.
Facebook? Seeing as you're such a Facebook fan.
Shaquille Naeem.
What a sigh that was. And that's us. So thanks for listening and tune in again soon. Catch you later.
Bye.
Ta-ta.
So why wasn't eHarmony your pick this week?
Because it's fucking shit.
You know he's going to put that at the end of the thing now, aren't you? He's just not going to let the thing run.
No, make sure that's not at the end. No, no. I'm just surprised you didn't mention it because I thought it was tech related, and for all those geeks out there, it would be something to be interested in. Oh, feel that sting.
That's okay. That's another one to go in my little diary.
Very good.
Ah, your little diary. Yep. Getting well used.
Yep.